Borrow a line from another famous TV show. Good news, guys. Wunsch is dead. Bagel! Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Bagel! Bagel!
I'm too American to understand this reference.
It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine, dude.
I'm too pop culture illiterate to understand this reference then.
Rest in peace to the greatest Dre of them all, Dre Brawler. Oh, we miss him. Oh, what a guy. Welcome to episode 598 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could listen to us on a... It's going to be a fun weekend of racing because, boy, have we got a lot to get through. Like, and this was before today's breaking news. And I would like to personally thank the racing gods for dropping the big story before we recorded this episode, because if we didn't, we'd be scrambling right now trying to find the Riverside studio to pull this off. So thank you, Red Bull Racing, for dropping the news at 10:40 this morning rather than 10:40 p.m. I'm very grateful.
Well, what news is that, Dre?
The news that we've sacrificed Krista Hardy via blood ritual to make sure we got the news early in the first place. No, I'm joking. Christian Horner's gone. Christian Horner has been sacked from Red Bull Racing. And this is normally the part where I'd have a loose and fun 5-minute intro with Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connell, who are here joining us on this week's episode of the show. But we thought we're going straight into this, Manchester United style. No mucking about, straight into
it. What, just start laughing?
Shut up. You're not wrong.
One of us starts making a low-wage workers redundant and cutting all their benefits because they feel...
That's just all of America right now.
I was going to say, you lot can't fucking talk right now over there.
it's awful here. Thanks.
We did it first. You did it better. Now, Christian...
we learned everything from you, Dad.
Okay. So, Christian Horner was fired by Red Bull Racing today. Dre, what happened? Why did they do it?
We'll get into that.
Gestures wildly.
It's a fun question, and with not very many straightforward answers. So to fill us in, 10:40 a.m. Well, I say it was about 10:20 a.m. Apparently, the embargo was going to be 11 in the morning, but a certain TV broadcaster went early. You can probably guess who. I'll give you a hint. It's not TNT. And they dropped the news out of nowhere that Christian Horner was sacked. And they used the language sacked at Red Bull Racing to describe the situation. All hell breaks loose. My office scrambles like a motherfucker getting a podcast together, which I was able to produce. Ding! And, we're now living in the aftermath of that. What we know since then is that Laurent Mekies has been promoted. He's now going to be Red Bull CEO and team principal going forward, formerly of Racing Bulls originally. He's been moved into that role effective immediately. And as we keep the domino effect going, Alain Permain, remember him when he was at Alpine, 27 years, an Enstone lifer? He's now going to be Racing Bulls team principal going forward to plug that gap as Laurent Mekies moves over to Red Bull. And look, Mekies is no slouch of a hire. He's been around F1 for over 20 years. You would never know it by looking at him because he's just far too cool to be in a Formula One paddock. Big promotion for him. And we have a lot to break down here. And well, first of all, I think I want to make the point that this genuinely came out of nowhere. This was not expected. This was not there's a bad run of form going on. The manager's definitely getting sacked. Christian himself was on TV less than a month ago saying that he was going nowhere. And, well, the board apparently came to a decision in a meeting on Monday morning that Christian Horner's services were no longer required at Red Bull. And I want to go around the room here for a minute and say, Cam, what was your initial reaction when you woke up and read it? Because the Americans missed out here for obvious reasons.
A deep what the fuck rang out through New England as I looked at my phone and wait. Fucking what? Because it was the ESPN notification that I got first on my phone. Mm. Basically, when I woke up, it was like the second notification down on my phone. So it's really weird. And I love how Racer put this earlier, is that it's like the biggest bombshell you've ever seen. That also, like, simultaneously, you didn't know it was happening, but you knew it was coming in one form or another.
Yeah, I've got that article from Chris Medlin. It goes back to October 2022. Now, not long before this, Red Bull had just won the driver's title. They were about to win both titles in 2022. They were the team to beat. Red Bull was also in negotiations with Porsche, but Porsche basically wanted to put all their people in charge of the program. Red Bull, Christian Horner, and Helmut Marko were like, that ain't happening. And that's ultimately why those talks broke down and why Porsche is not supplying engines for this F1 cycle. So they made good to Formula One by allowing themselves to be a prominent part of the movie, which I talked about recently. They would not have seen what would come around the corner about a month or two. Dietrich Mateschitz passed away. And after he did, the balance of power within Red Bull Greater and within the racing team began to shift. And all of a sudden, the long-standing relationship between Christian Horner and Helmut Marko, even during 2023, when Max Verstappen was as perfect as you could be in Formula One, there was still unrest between them. Then came the scandal.
I was going to say, this, it's interesting. It's the first time I've seen somebody refer to it as far back as 2022 and the Red Bull Porsche negotiations that ultimately never materialized. For me, I don't think there is one explicit smoking gun reason as to why Horner is gone. I think this is an accumulation of a lot of things that have added up to the point where I think the smoke was too much to ignore coming out of the kitchen.
It's a lot of factors.
The ones that I can run off the page here, I didn't know that Horner and Marko were at loggerheads ever since the Porsche situation, but there's always been public signs that those two have not got along on the same page for some time anyway, when it comes to things like driver decisions, the way they handle Nyck de Vries and Daniel Ricciardo and Liam Lawson, that's not been straightforward at all. The way that, the team that was at less than 2 years ago was absolutely dominant. They were one win away from literal perfection in Formula One, something that is still arguably the greatest Formula One season the team has ever constructed. To lose out that quickly to the point where they are a team that has been held up by the brilliance of Max Verstappen is not ideal. The Sexton scandal, obviously, while the team will never flat out say that Horner lost his job for that reason, because they can't, because legally Horner was cleared of all wrongdoing in two separate investigations. Rightly or wrongly, that's just the facts.
Yeah.
And, the losing of critical staff.
Yeah, like, that's the other thing. Because all the people you lose when you're at the top like that. I mean, recent example from ball sports. The Detroit Lions are so good that they're losing coordinators. They're losing assistants left and right. Now, obviously, Lions hadn't won four straight Super Bowls the way that Red Bull won four straight championships, but look at all the people they've lost, right?
Yeah, and it is a who's who of fantastic team names, the core of that team. Adrian Newey's the big one, and a lot of people will point to Adrian Newey, of course. His credentials need no explanation. The greatest F1 designer we've ever seen, the greatest technical mind, arguably, the Formula One has ever had. He went after 18 years with the team. Rob Marshall, who left and immediately went to McLaren, the guy who I spoke to Ronald Vordin about this at Autosport this morning as we were putting their podcast together, internally, he had a nickname, Rob Marshall. That nickname was the King of the Flexi Wings. goes to McLaren, immediately wins a championship in his first full season with the team.
With accusations of them implementing what, you may ask?
Flexi wings. Funny that. Ward Marshall leaves, joins a direct rival, and immediately wins a championship first time of asking.
Let's not forget, they were not a direct rival at the time. Was McLaren's ascendance through 23, through 24, and now in the dominant position in Formula One.
They went from midfielder to world champions in less than 2 years.
They went from backmarker to world champions in about 3 years. They had the worst car in F1 to kick off 2023.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Jonathan Wheatley, generally regarded as the best sporting director and number two man in Formula One. Fantastic reputation. Hailed as the glue guy within Red Bull's trenches. The guy that was putting it all together for Red Bull as Horner's right-hand man. Now, look, I don't think this is directly to do with Horner directly. I think when you're offered the chance to be a factory team's team principal as a number one job, you've got to give that serious consideration. Jonathan Wheatley is gone. He's at Kicksalber. And look at the job he's doing this season so far. More on that later.
We'll talk about that later.
And you know, Will Courtenay is another one as well. Well, Red Bull's chief of strategy. He's going to be McLaren's sporting director next year. Again, Red Bull strategy department is excellent. One of the best in the business. And he's going as well. That picture, like Autosport's done the rounds of that elite group of their winning core, all of them are gone in the space of less than 2 years. It's crazy. So that's another factor that I think comes into play. And of course, well, the most obvious one, and it's one that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable for multiple reasons. This team is not winning anymore. Max has 2 wins out of 12 races so far this season. And that's mostly through sheer force of will. That's almost purely because of Max's brilliance as a driver. We know how good he is. It's now pretty universally accepted that Verstappen's the best driver in the world, week to week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having to wring the neck of that Red Bull to get any kind of performance out of it, to the point where you could double the point total of every other Red Bull driver that's been in their car so far this year, Lawson, Tsunoda, etc. You could double their point haul.
Well, you can't double zero in Lawson's case.
Yeah, they could double their point total and they would still be last in the Constructors' Championship if Verstappen wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It is bad, and look, this is what makes, and this is a point that I really feel is important, the one that I need to make. And it's an indictment not only of Red Bull, but I'd argue Formula One and I'd argue sport as a whole. It makes me deeply uncomfortable that a sexual harassment investigation wasn't enough for Christian Horner to lose his job, but a drop in performance was. It's because it says to me that Red Bull as a sporting entity cares more about their success on the track than it does about keeping women safe within their own organization. And I feel like that's something that needs to be addressed, and I don't see enough people making that point. I can wrap it up in a very simple phrase: winning solves everything. And that's
absolutely.
And it's unfortunate that that phrase is a thing and that phrase is being used. But that's the reality of what this is, and it makes me deeply uncomfortable.
So from 2010 to 2013, Christian Horner and Sebastian Vettel, Red Bull, and Adrian Newey, and a lot of those guys were on top of the world. Then there was a dip, then there was an upswing, and then there was another dip, and now the difference in this dip from the one that they have from like 2014 to 2017, 18-ish, is that they're going into a new power unit chain. They're going into a new power unit regulations with the somewhat unproven commodity in Ford Red Bull powertrains.
You mean so, completely unproven?
Yes.
Because
I'm trying to gloss it over.
There is no glossing that over, because what they are trading is the debatable best power unit in the sport right now in the equipment that Honda's been providing them for the last couple of years, to their own self-built power unit. And let me tell you, there's a certain telltale when you're going into new regulations of who's happy about them and who isn't. And generally, if you're the entity that's screaming from the rooftops to get the regulations changed, you're probably not that confident going in next year.
Yeah. Whereas in 2013 to 2014, they were still sticking with Renault in a relationship that was only about to get colder and colder and colder as the years went on until they eventually went to Honda the first time. And another thing that they don't have a Daniel Ricciardo type second driver at the moment. They have not had a Daniel Ricciardo type second driver since Daniel Ricciardo took the money and went to Enstone.
This is year 7 since Daniel Ricciardo left them in 2018, and they still haven't got a second driver anywhere near what Daniel Ricciardo was able to bring to that team.
So got, in three quarters, they got like across 4 seasons, they got 3 quarters of a Sergio Perez season that was worthy.
In hindsight, Sergio Perez probably wasn't all that bad last year, given it's actually somehow gotten worse in that second seat situation since his departure. And Perez went out sad at the end of his Red Bull tenure. Mm-hmm. And that's a trend that has continued. And look, again, I've said this before about Red Bull. We've seen drivers like Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon and Daniel Ricciardo all have success with other teams, which says to me this is inherently a Red Bull problem, not a driver talent issue. They've got
the other one. There's the other one that got away too, Carlos Sainz.
Yeah,
and Carlos Sainz he never even got to the senior team.
Yeah,
and he's never given an opportunity to.
Yeah, and Carlos has already proven as a multiple time race winner that he is a quality racing driver. There is no doubt about that anymore. So. The question on my script was this justified? Look, really, my attitude to this has always been this. They either should have sacked Christian Horner 2 years ago, or they should have sacked him 2 years in the future. Like,
that's kind of how fuck you for thinking. Stop reading my mind, Harrison. Why do you even want to be in here?
Sacking someone now, 2 rounds before the summer break, mid-season, with a huge regulation change less than a year away, on any level sounds extremely odd to me.
Extremely odd, extremely risky, with some, like, this engine project was effectively his and Marco's, like, their crown jewel of independence, that they control their own destiny as far as the engines. Well, now the architect, one half of that architect team is gone. And while I am invoking the LeBron James, the fuckery can't go on for much longer with Helmut Marko, the fuckery may continue, but he's also an advisor.
Yeah.
And he isn't able to, he's not going to be team principal here.
Yeah.
There is a lot of uncertainty even beyond what we knew was going to be happening with Red Bull going into the next year. Their design team is stuck with a car they don't quite know how to fix. They're losing their engine partner. They're very possibly losing their star driver in Max Verstappen, if you believe all of the clickbait F1 social media pages. I like how this move has completely split the room even harder of, yes, Max is definitely staying, or Max is definitely leaving now.
We don't know. I had people outside my regular circles who watch racing, but they're just like, did they make this move because they're desperate to keep Max Verstappen? Or did they make this move because, as had been suggested by at least one source, because they already lost him?
And I think both reasons are equally tangible.
Cam talked about it too. Mm. Like, this was ultimately a power struggle between the two warring factions of Red Bull, the two heads of the charge who are pretty villainous in their own ways. One of them won, one of them lost.
Yeah, that's ultimately what this is the logical endpoint of a power struggle, the power struggle that was talked about a moment ago, of Horner and the 51% ownership of Red Bull being the tie portion of the company. And then Helmut Marko, the Verstappen camp, and the Austrian side of the company, which owned 49%.
Mark Matterswitz and Helmut Marko, etc.
And these two sides of the team have been, like, since they lost their North Star, indeed, they have been at war. We know that, I mean, Vinslav is not a racing guy. He's a football guy. He was always jealous of Red Bull F1 getting all the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if it wasn't Horner, it was going to be Marko. But if it was going to be Marko, they would have lost Max. Now they might lose him anyway.
Boy, that's going to be in a tough situation. Do you know how wild it is that Yuki Tsunoda, in the absolute lowest form as a Formula One driver, even worse than any of his worst times at the team formerly known as Minority, that he might have leverage in this situation too?
I would say so, but Helmut Marko is still there, and he's not the biggest Tsunoda fan. And who's going to argue with him now?
All the pack watching of Horner, like, well, the good news is your primary guy is dead. The secondary guy, I draw the line at sex pest, but racist Austrian? Nah, he's cool. That's where we are with Red Bull.
Yeah,
the example you laid out is like Joseph Stalin defeated Adolf Hitler at Stalin and the Eastern Front. This is Mussolini winning a split decision over Franco.
Yeah, it's
Donald not Trump has passed away. Unfortunately, Mitch McConnell's still here.
Hey, Mitch McConnell never won the 24 hours of Le Mans. Come on.
Can you tell I'm stuck with two Americans here right now? Well, the way
we have the power to do anymore is just roast the shit out of our government. And
it's raining in for a bit.
Yes.
Okay. Lauren Mekke's now at Red Bull. He's CEO and team principal. And Dre, you described it as a hospital pass. For those of you unfamiliar with your rugby or your football terminology, that's when the quarterback throws a ball up in the air and the wide receiver's got to catch it with defensive backs and linebackers converging on him, ready to drive him into the ground like a crater.
Yeah, like, this is the definition of a hospital pass. Because, look, speaking purely objectively here, let's weigh up where Red Bull's at as an organization. As mentioned, you have one great thing going for you. You have the best racing driver in the world. You have arguably still a lot of resources. That's a plus.
Yep.
But right now, you have a car that only proven that one man in the world can extract its full potential out of. You have an academy that is sputtering on fumes because its tank is almost empty at the moment, and there is no guarantee that Arvid Lindblad is going to be great if you rush him through the classes. You haven't had a competent second driver in half a decade. I wouldn't say Perez was totally bad throughout his entire tenure, but it's probably been at least 3 years since you've had at least a competent number two.
Right? It was pretty good. The bad was really bad.
23 is when things really started to go off the boil.
Yeah, like,
a lot of components of Red Bull.
You've had at least 2 years without a quality second driver, and arguably six out of the last seven, roughly. That's one thing. You've come off the back of your team, of your fellow peer as team principal being sacked off the back of poor performance and an alleged tech sexting scandal. Your team's reputation is in the mud. They're cooking you on social media, and you're now replacing the man who's been the face of this franchise for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
And for all of the shitting on Christian Horner we have just done, and will continue to do, he's still the most successful team principal of the last 25 years.
He has more wins than every other Ferrari team principal combined since he took the job.
Yeah,
that's not really saying much, given that's post-2004.
No matter which way you slice it, factually speaking, he has won 8 drivers' championships and 6 constructors' championships in just 20 years of being on the grid. That is a remarkable accomplishment.
It's a year that he started at 31 years young.
He ran an F1 team at 31 years old and won a world championship in 5 years.
And then won three more doubles.
Like,
you know what I was doing at 31? I was with the all fuckers.
You know what I'll be doing at 31?
You know what I'll be doing at 31? Probably still hanging out with you fuckers.
This is my point.
Objectively speaking, those are huge shoes to fill. Because this team was architected into the multi-headed monster that dominated the start of the 2010s and dominated the start of the 2020s.
Yeah.
But right now it is far from that. You're losing your engine partner. If they lose Max, this is a rebuild on the level of the Process 76ers.
Yeah, this is like, if they lose Max, it's a full blown rebuild. You've got hope if Max elects himself to stay. The good news is he still has 3 years left on his contract if he sticks it out. You've got 3 seasons of Max. Barring performance clauses or any other major shenanigans if he elects to stay. And honestly, I am in the camp that is leaning more towards he's likely going to stay. Because I think his camp has instituted a power play to get rid of Horner in the first place. And I don't think you do that with the intention. Because why would you give a shit about pushing someone out the door if you were going to leave anyway?
To sow even more discontent within the ranks?
That doesn't make any sense if you're leaving, though. That's just spite.
Have you seen the way Max Verstappen drives? I like that psycho, but he's a spiteful fucker on track.
The thing is that Verstappen is not the problem here. He has people to do his dirty work for him. That's the thing. That whole camp, Dre,
is like, they've got the spite. Jos Verstappen has been walking around this paddock going, "I told you so," for over a year now.
I'm well aware. Like, don't get me wrong. I totally get it. And look, pulling it back towards what RJ was saying, like, Laurent Mekies is no scrub. He has been in this paddock for nearly 25 years. People forget he debuted in 2001 with the remnants of the Arrows team. That's how long he's been around. He's done Arrows, he's been with RJ's beloved team Faenza, he was at Toro Rosso for nearly a decade. You know, he's done a total of 10 years with Toro Rosso. He was with the FIA for half a decade, and he was Ferrari sporting director from 2018 to 2023, and had some good seasons there with Ferrari. You can't call all of that time trash. Laurent Mekies is a good sporting director, and I think he's generally done a pretty solid job in his second tenure at Racing Bulls. I think this is a worthy position for him to move
Dre,
into.
This is a great wide receiver that just got thrown a ball. And let me tell you, he's about to get some CTE, the likes of which we have never seen before, because he is getting concussed into next week.
What I was going to say is, if he pulls this off, then he's immediately the best team principal in Formula One. And there's some good names in this paddock right now. He's got a mountain to climb here. And he's probably going to have to be in this for the long haul, because there is an above 0% chance that this is going to be a full-blown rebuild. If he gets to keep Max, that's a bonus.
Have your core to build around at that point. Yeah,
and there's still some good technical minds at Red Bull. They can build a competent team around. The problem is that are they going to be able to retain all that talent? What is it going to be with life after Horner? Because the director of communications was also sacked, and apparently he was a big Horner guy. So it looks like a lot of the shades of the old scheme are being turfed out here. So,
we do not know a Red Bull Racing without the Christian Horner regime.
Yeah.
We are in uncharted territories from day one until earlier this morning. Kimi Antonelli does not know a world where Christian Horner is not the Red Bull team principal.
Or a year after that. A couple other things here. Alan Permain of Racing Bulls. I mean,
good for him.
That's a solid choice. He gets a chance to be a team principal and a team that could really use some veteran guidance.
he did 27 years at Enstone, and I always felt like he got a bad rap when he was let go alongside Otmar Szafnauer at Alpine. He was not the reason why Alpine was struggling. And again, Permain was a massively respected personality across the paddock. It wasn't like...
It was shock to the system when we found out that he was in that Renault. This one. Renault firing squad.
Right. Like this, I'd argue there was more upset and shock over Permain being let go than Szafnauer was.
100%. A veteran of Enstone who saw them through their rise as Benetton. To their fall as Benetton, to their rise as Renault.
Yeah.
And even more. Because that used to be my team back when they were Lotus and Raikkonen was driving for them. And yeah. He was damn good at his job. Max asks in the chat, does Pierre Wacka survive this rebuild? I'm going to pencil that in as a maybe. Because right now, Red Bull are also in the midst of having to open a new wind tunnel because we know... their old wind tunnel has been giving them problems because it's really, really damn old. It is a relic of the Cold War.
It's an ancient wind tunnel, and also Red Bull have been struggling for a good few years to get the Council of Milton Keynes, where their team is based, to get them planning permission to build a new wind tunnel. There are loggerheads with the local government about that for some time to figure out a site that would actually make sense to build it. They finally got that green lit, and they're ahead of schedule, which is good for them, but it's
this years down the line. We saw how long it took McLaren to get theirs off the ground. The thing is with that,
still isn't fully operational for what it's worth.
Yeah, and they have to be working on their 2026 car now. Actually, yesterday, last week. I think the bigger thing with Pierre is that for as much as been talked about with Adrian Newey leaving, the slide with the car started in late 23, really middle of 23. But because that car was so fucking busted, the RB19, you didn't really see it cropping up out on track until really a few races into 2024 when the car was fast, but it wasn't that easy to drive. It increasingly has turned into the Honda MotoGP bike of the second half of the 2010s. It's fast in the hands of one dude, but there are limitations to that. Or it breaks his arm. Well, we know that story all too well. I think he'll have a little bit of a leash, because I think Red Bull has much bigger problems going into next year.
Horner will likely resurface at some point after this gardening.
He's already been linked to two other Formula One teams.
He's too good not to. Look, I've said it before. The shit that he's been accused of is not enough of a deal breaker in sports to keep him out of the window forever. As much as I hate to admit it, that's the landscape that sports are in right now.
And not when he's been legally cleared, because the team wouldn't be able to hold him to it.
Exactly. He's been rumored with Alpine. He's been rumored with Ferrari. I think Ferrari are crazy to even be thinking about trying to get rid of Fred Vasseur this soon.
Yep.
But that was the rumor, and now there is far fewer obstacles in the way.
That's just typical Ferrari. And the other option is Alpine, where
fired 80% speed run?
Christian Horner and Flavio Briatore in the same room potentially would be insane.
A murderer's row of hated F1 team principals.
The thing is, though, I think it's a lot more plausible that he ends up at Alpine, if for no other reason of some people just don't want to relocate and move their shit to Italy.
100%.
I think if Alpine walked up to Christian Horner, gave him a blank check, and said, "What's it going to take? Plus, we'll make you a shareholder in the team." I think Christian would find that very hard to turn down.
Okay, this is probably either Horner or Briatore.
He'd be nuts not to take it, but also, there's no way he lasts long enough in that team to affect real change. There's
Depends how long a leash they give him.
They wouldn't, because this is Renault and Alpine we're talking about.
Well, that's the thing, right? Luca de Meo is now, like, at a point where he's gone. So, like, maybe a new CEO at Alpine will have a different philosophy of thinking about this. But Alpine needs stability. And Christian Horner is, well, love him or hate him.
He used to mean stability. Not so much lately.
He used to be the most stable team boss in Formula One. Because, look, now that Christian's gone, it is Toto Wolff and every other team principal, all of them, have been employed from 2023 or more recently. It's become football. One bad year and you're out now.
Andrea Sella took his job in late 2023. I still cannot think of him as anything but a Ferrari engineer. He's now the second longest tenured team principal in Formula One.
That don't feel right.
It feels ugly just thinking about it. But I think it's something that they would seriously consider. That just about puts a neat little bow on our Christian Horner section. My closing thoughts on it is the timing is weird. I think firing team principals is the sort of subject in sports where you can probably talk yourself into doing so if you want to badly enough. And with Red Bull, I think the British Grand Prix and how it played out was probably a symbolic way of saying we're not winning either championship this year with the way that race played out. And they've got it set up for 2026. So if they're going to blow this shit up, now is probably the time. I hope Christian Horner takes his money and we never see him in Formula One again. That guy has put the sport into disrepute many, many times. I'll give him this. He's done an incredible job with Red Bull Racing, and I will always give him a smudge of respect for that. But I do not respect Christian Horner as a human being. He has made his team an uncomfortable team to talk about and an uncomfortable place to work for. And that will be an element of his legacy that will not be forgotten, whether he wants it to be or not. And you cannot talk about Christian Horner, one of the greatest of all time as a team principal at Red Bull and his two-decade-long tenure, without doing so. And I hope that sticks with him. And I hope that sticks with us as an audience too, because that's something that I think is too big to ignore. And yes, I do think he'll be back. And that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable.
But you know who is back?
What is
who
back?
Who is back? Well, he's back on a step of the podium for the first time in 10 years in any race. Guys.
We are hulking back.
I never thought I'd see the day. Nico Hülkenberg has a Formula One podium. He finally did it. We are not pulling your leg. We are not jabating you. He did it at the British Grand Prix. Yeah, Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri finished 1-2 in a McLaren 1-2.
No one cares.
Yes, there was a bunch of rain. Nico Hülkenberg got himself on the strategy that would put him in contention to finish on the podium. And even as I kept telling myself, I've been here too many times before. I was here in Brazil 2012. I was here in Germany 2019. It ain't happening. He then overtakes Lance Stroll to get third. He holds off Lewis Hamilton as the track tried. And I thought when Hamilton was closing, I'm just like, he's dead. And he wasn't. He pulled away.
He gapped. He defeated Lewis Hamilton and ended Lewis Hamilton's podium streak at Silverstone to claim his own.
A 15-year streak.
In a fucking Sauber!
Uh-huh. Third place. The new, oldest Formula One podium finisher since George Fulmer in 1973.
Foreshadow. 239
career starts in the making. the first podium for Sauber since Kamui Kobayashi at Suzuka in 2012. And fun fact, if you take out all those Sergio Perez podiums, maybe a Heidfelder Petrov here and there, sequentially, Kubica, Kobayashi, and now Hülkenberg finished on the podium, the opposite order in which they won 24 hours of Le Mans.
You know, we all thought that this was a massive upgrade, leaving Haas and going to Sauber, right?
No.
Absolutely no. Not. I thought he was doomed to fail.
We all thought that he was the wrong man to replace Haas. Because instead of developing Mick Schumacher and giving him some confidence, you throw in some old retread who hadn't been in the sport full time in 3 years and already had his chances and blew a lot of them.
It's one of these things where, at a point, and I've always been a big admirer of Nico Hülkenberg, I've been from the time he debuted, because you look at Hülkenberg and you look back on his career and you go, this is not how the story should have really been written. But it was anyway. I mean, give me 2 minutes here, but you look back to the fact that he had a glistening junior record, won in Formula BMW, won the GP2 series as a rookie, won A1 Grand Prix against some really quality drivers, guys that would go on to be household names in other series. Hülkenberg was coming into Formula One shit hot, went to Williams, had that pole position at Interlagos, and then immediately got benched for Pastor Maldonado because Williams needed cash. He had to do a year as a test driver, came back with Force India, was great then too, had a few near misses there in 2012, went to Sauber in 2013. Back end of that season at Sauber, he was electric. Fifth in Monza, fourth in Korea. That Korean Grand Prix, he was incredible. Rubbing shoulders with Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton, Mark Webber, a who's who of the sports elite at that time. Went back to Force India again, was still strong in the hybrids, but it always felt like he was never the number one option for a team to take a punt on him for a top tier seat. I've made that story reference before, that with Ross Brawn at Mercedes when he took the job on, and repackaged Brawn into Mercedes. If they could never get Lewis Hamilton, if Hamilton stayed at McLaren in 2012, Hülkenberg was next on the list.
Yeah, it was one of a number of missed opportunities. I mean, I remember stretches in those early to mid-2010s where either Hülkenberg used to love kicking on at the second half of the season, when a lot of the good rides were then filled up by people not named Nico Hülkenberg. And that's if they were a team that was willing to take on a driver who was oversized by the standards of Formula One, because Nico Hülkenberg is roughly an even 6 feet tall in a 5'7", 5'8" person's world.
Yeah, didn't help. You know, went to Renault, beat Carlos Sainz around, but then lost out when Daniel Ricciardo came to town. And Ricciardo himself was exceptional, especially in the second year at Renault in 2020, the COVID season. Ricciardo was a driver of the year candidate that year, in my opinion. And then he spent 3 years out as a COVID substitute. Mm-hmm. You know, but
put the pink Mercedes P3 on the grid, first time of asking.
17th anniversary Grand Prix, the one we had to double up at Silverstone. First qualifying session, P3, in a goddamn Force India, as it was racing point. The tracing point, and finished 7th. Went to the Nürburgring, had to fill in, I think it was Lance Stroll that caught COVID last minute. Had to fly Hülkenberg back in, had to start from the back of the grid, finished 8th from one driver of the day. Like, he had to work very hard to get back onto this grid, because once you're off said grid, it's very hard to get back on it.
Yeah.
And he did. And again, as RJ alluded to, we thought he was the wrong man coming in at Haas. We gave Mick Schumacher the benefit of the doubt, rightly or wrongly, in regards to his future in F1. Hülkenberg made that team his own at Haas. He was better than Kevin Magnussen. He became the de facto team leader. He was racking up points week in, week out for Haas. Was exceptional last year in getting Haas their best season in years under Ayo Komatsu last year. Called it a breath of fresh air. We all put this move to Sauber as a downgrade because they were spinning their wheels at the back of the grid a year ago. Through an update, through Jonathan Wheatley's leadership, and through just sheer good driving, Hülkenberg has outscored Max Verstappen the last four race weekends combined. And now he has his first Grand Prix podium. And there wasn't a whole huge amount of shenanigans. This was, okay, the start was a bit messy. And
yeah.
It's funny, and now we know the context that Hülkenberg ignored his race engineer Gary Gannon twice in the first 10 laps.
I was saying, maybe we should question Jonathan Wheatley in this scenario, because Hülkenberg went into business for himself here, and it worked.
And it worked, and he got it right. I mean, ultimately, in those kind of conditions, the driver really should make the call, given the track, because they know it better than anybody else does. But as soon as the track was wet, Hülkenberg was as quick as the elite runners in the field. He held off Lewis Hamilton straight up in a dogfight. Got a little bit of an extra gap with the way the pit stop shook out when everybody switched to slicks at the end of the race. And Hulk held him off. Hulk held Hamilton at bay, legitimately, clean as a whistle. He earned that podium. It was an exceptional performance. Arguably the driver of the year so far in Formula One. No one in Formula One has ever deserved the podium more than Nico Hülkenberg has. He's an exceptional racing driver, and he has been for over a decade. And it's not his fault, but me personally, I've always been frustrated at the fact that other drivers have had their day in the sun. Checo had like 8 podiums before he joined Red Bull. Kamui Kobayashi had his moments. You know, we've had other freak podiums in Formula One for guys that had a really good day. And Hulk could dodge that bullet somehow like half a dozen times before we'd even got to this race.
How many years when they were racing for Force India, getting blood from a stone, you know, financially with that team, where he would have the better results in terms of floor by a mile, but Perez was always a little bit more flashy. He would get the podium. He would capitalize on the dumb bullshit race.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Perez was the undisputed king of that. He was the king of being in the right place at the right time, and it showed. And I think ultimately, when you're going to make that decision about driver hires, the flash wins out over the safe pick a lot of the time, because the flash is more appealing. You want that upside. You want that shiny hood ornament there rather than Mr. Solid, you know.
Right? Yeah. Like when he had an opportunity again to go to Mercedes and they approached him, he had already signed with Renault for the 2017 season, had already committed to their 5-year plan, which of course is now 5 decades removed from the 5-year plan, and they still have won one race.
Every big hitting team in Formula One now had a chance to sign Nico Hülkenberg and passed him up at some point for some reason. Mercedes got Hamilton instead, completely understandably. Ferrari nearly signed him in 2014. They went with Kimi Raikkonen instead. Again, understandable. Raikkonen had driven the nuts off that Lotus at the time. It made sense. You know, Mercedes, mentioned him earlier. McLaren at one point were apparently interested. Red Bull thought about bringing Hulk in just as a solid pair of hands in 2021 when they were concerned about Alex Albon. And they went with Perez instead because Perez was fourth in the championship in 2020. He had a monster season that year. So Hulk has always been the number two guy on the list. And that's always been his biggest problem. Like maybe not being consistently great for maybe more than a year at a time. And he's always, I think, been like a nearly man for that reason. But it's never been because of his talent. Ever.
No, and there's been a couple scenarios where that podium really should have come for me. It will always be Spa 2016,
Oh,
that B-Spec Force India was a missile around that track. And Hamilton, that was the weekend where they stuffed like five engines in the back of Hamilton's car in practice to give him a fresh pool for the rest of the year. K-Mag has his enormous crash at the top of Radeon, and that bunches the field up, and Lewis comes chainsawing through the pack in that mighty 2016 Merc. And Hulkenberg was left without a podium once again. But, going back then.
Poor judgment.
The dragster of poor judgment. Look.
Germany 19.
Look, he wasn't the only one who had a bad day that year.
No, in all fairness. There's a reason we call it that. Let's put it to you that way. And again, he wasn't the only. Like, more talented people had a bad day that day. It is one of them ones, but.
I mean, back in 2015, what did you do on your weekend off? Well, I won Le Mans.
He held his own with Earl Bamber and the Tandy Man.
Yeah, he got in that car and was the slowest of the three, but not by much. And he did his job.
That whole team had the back half of that race in a vice grip that they just did not let go of. When you're the third best driver on that team, it ain't bad. You're still better than everybody else.
Yeah, because they took control of that race in the night against much more experienced and, frankly speaking, a quicker car before it started falling apart in the night with the Audi.
Mm.
And they just never let it go. And that is the last time he stood on a podium in any setting in an FIA-sanctioned race.
Know what to do. He forgot to take his helmet to the cool down room. He was kind of holding his trophy, and it's just like,
It was like Ricky Bobby after his first race. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Lando Norris had to bring his helmet with him to the cool down room. And this felt like, and this is not an insult, like a B-spec version of Dale Earnhardt finally winning the Daytona 500. It was actually genuinely, and we don't get very many of these moments in Formula One anymore, so it's nice to see it when it does happen. Just a mutual appreciation from everybody in the sport. Because you know what it is? I think these drivers know what it's like to be on that side of the fence. I think these guys know how difficult a job this is. It's a mutual appreciation of everybody on that grid knowing just what a damn good driver Nico Hülkenberg is and has been for the last 15 years, and he finally got his moment. And the celebrations were awesome. Gabriel Bortoleto ran from the pit lane to be the first guy to congratulate him. There was a very wholesome moment of
Max fist out of the fist bumping up next to him. Max did not have a particularly great day in the rain with his Monza downforce.
Man celebrated like he'd won the Grand Prix, but like him and Max are very good friends, and like you can see, Max was literally pumping out of the car for him. Mercedes and Aston Martin, in very generous circles, actually gave them their champagne to have a proper celebration, because Sauber didn't have any, because they would never think
they were not in a million years. Everyone in that Sauber team, let me tell you, this upgrade, relatively speaking, this might be better than the 2024 B-Spec McLaren. They started off this year, same old Sauber. Same old tanking for wind tunnel concessions. Hashtag the process. And they have ruined their own tank because they've been kicking ass for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
They have 41 points, 35 of them in the last four race weekends, and they are now sixth in the Constructors' Championship. And only with margin to spare, and only a handful of points behind Williams, who have only scored 4 points in the last four weekends.
Yeah, Williams started off hotter than fish grease, and unfortunately the car is now hotter than fish grease because it keeps catching on fire.
What Outcast used to say about elevators, not all of them are going up.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, Williams have been poor the last couple weekends.
Let's put it this way. Sauber might be ruining their own tank, but I can think of 40 million reasons why it might be worth skipping that one out if they can hold on to this. All of us here unanimously projected they'd be bottom of the constructor standings.
Yeah.
They're currently sitting $40 million better than we thought they were going to be this year. That's a lot of change.
That would buy a cancerous title sponsor or two.
Bitchin'.
Please, God.
Yeah, and just think now, like, Pierre Gasly had a good day. Pierre Gasly had a great day. Phenomenal drive.
I feel so bad for Gasly.
And they are cooked. Because they are about to be the best ever worst team in Formula One.
It's official. With 19 points, Alpine already has more points than the previous best worst team in Formula One history. 2023 Haas got 12.
Yeah, unless we have a certified photocopier incident between McLaren and Ferrari once again, we will now have the best ever worst F1 team. Quantitatively.
I feel so bad for Pierre Gasly. That is a sixth place. That's a monster result given the shit that Alpine has gone through all year. That's a monster result, and it's going to be completely forgotten about, because the thing about Alpine is, if you look at their points, they've only scored points in 3 races out of 12 so far this season, but they've been chunky points. A sixth, a seventh, and an eighth. In fact, every team on the grid, now that Gasly finished sixth, has a top six finish this season. The last time that happened, 2005. And there's a big asterisk
on why that is. Well, who's to say? Before that, 2002.
The last time we had that was 2002, and it's the only other time through 12 rounds of an F1 season that everyone on the grid has a top six finish.
Let's be real.
90s point scoring.
Big element of that was also Australia and the terrible, no good, very bad turn one.
All out, baby.
I was talking about Toyota.
Alpine's going to be sitting there going, we're having a pretty good season. We have 19 points at halfway. How do you mean we're lost?
The Renault engine program going out sad, as ever.
But you know who wasn't going out sad? McLaren. Oh, boy.
Ass beatings, ass whoopings.
Yeah, they won this race by like 30-plus seconds again. It was an ass whooping by McLaren.
Yeah, but it was weird because Lando won, but the big swing in the race was Oscar Piastri was leading the race under the safety car when it was still wet. But as the safety car lights went out down the hangar straight, Piastri goes from 135 to 32 miles per hour. He hits those brakes hard. Max Verstappen has to take avoiding action. This almost causes a pileup as funny as the Chicago one in the opening stages. Shout out Carson Hocevar and Austin Dillon. But Piastri gets a 10-second time penalty for driving erratically behind the safety car. And that was the difference between finishing first and second as a result. But Cam, before I talk about whether that's or not a fair penalty, you said that this deprived us of a really fun finish for the lead.
Did I say that? I mean, I agree.
Because I know that you were talking about it, like saying,
the Discord. Okay. Well, because first, most of this race after Oscar dispatched Max with his no wing setup, Oscar was taking everybody to Gapplebee's. Later on, race gets bunched up by a monsoon. Capital everything monsoon. But after that, Lando was running him down pretty much the full second half of the race. He's chipping a tenth, 2/10, eventually 3/10 out of him. Don't know what might have happened had he caught Piastri. They both would have had to pit for dry tires, and both did as the track dried out. Oscar almost certainly would have gotten preferential treatment. Does that end the race? Maybe. This is the car ahead. But we'll never know, because Oscar Piastri copped himself that 10-second penalty. And let's say this one was well-earned, because, as mentioned, drops his speed significantly as soon as the safety car lights go out. That's a big no-no.
So slow.
That is not allowed under the regulations. Beyond that, he dropped it aggressively. He applied about 60 PSI of brake pressure. And now that's just one element of this, because Russell was about 32 back in Canada when we had the controversy. Was he trying to goad Max into a race ban? That was unpenalized. This one was. 60 PSI is a number in isolation. You also need to consider they run a shitload of engine braking here. mm-hmm. just because the nature of Silverstone as a track. And it was in the wet.
Yeah.
That is that is 4 or 5 stages of driving erratically, all layered together in a nice lasagna.
They race where there's enough spray and precipitation where, once again, Pirelli has made the best worst wet tire. It moves so much water that you really can't race in it.
Yeah, and you couple that to ground effect cars where it was already a problem when they went to the big wide tires in 17, and you compound the problem to a ridiculous degree. The wet tire is no longer fit for purpose and hasn't been for a while. The spray was so bad that an unsighted Hadjar decided to rear end Kimi Antonelli going into cops because he just couldn't see him.
And you look at the onboard. Kimi Antonelli is like 5 feet in front of Hadjar, and Hadjar can't see him. And it really is as simple as, and look, say what you will about F1, you can be boomers all you like about this, I don't care. If you can't see a car that's 6 feet in front of you, it is not safe to race. It is as simple as that. I don't know why we're having any kind of discussion about this. If you can't see, you cannot race. And I think Cam's spot on, in all fairness. If anything, I think Cam's being generous. Like, because in the context of how the sport is being officiated right now, the stewards, maybe unconsciously, are probably going to be looking a little bit closer at these sorts of restarts because of what happened in Canada, because of the fact that Red Bull felt it was significant enough to fire a right of review at Mercedes. And no, don't get me wrong, I think it's a system that's ripe for abuse because the worst you'll face is a €2,000 deposit if you get
a race win out of it. That's worth it all day.
You can whack 2 zeros on that, 3 zeros on that, and it would still be worth it. The point I'm getting at here is that the stewards have been looking at these closely. They've had to. Maybe unconsciously, you look at the Canada situation, and therefore you probably look at these restarts a little bit more closely. Piastri had apparently already caught the stewards' attention because he had allegedly done this on the first safety car restart that we had done. And because what happened with this one, it was the second time he had done that. And as mentioned, 100 mile an hour closing speed difference, 60 PSI of brake pressure in the wet. Max had to take avoiding action to avoid a collision. For me, it's a slam dunk, and Oscar's a damn fool for that. Like, quite frankly, in my opinion, we should be judging Oscar a bit more harshly for this, because this was silly driving.
You will not find many more dumb ways to lose a race.
And the thing is, because it's a 2-horse race for the championship now, because your only major threat is Lando Norris, this cost you a win. This cost you a 14-point swing. And it was something that was so completely unnecessary and avoidable. If we're going to be evaluating Oscar Piastri as a world championship contender, you don't make stupid mistakes like this, because I can guarantee you, if Lando Norris had done that, we'd have buried him for it.
100%. That was the kind of silly ways that, like, Mercedes lost a couple races in 2020 on silly infractions like that. We're going, are they really so dominant that they're just forgetting procedure and fucking up and losing races? You can't afford that when your teammate is far fewer than 10 seconds behind you. He was shadowing him about 2 seconds behind. Because the wonder was, does maybe Piastri pull a gap? And he couldn't.
And I do think it was very cheeky that Oscar got on the radio in the final 10 laps of that race and said, if you think it's a harsh penalty, swap us back and let us race. I'd like to remind...
Can I just say, Oscar Piastri, he's allowed to be mad, because you'd be mad too if you lost the race in that stupid way.
Yeah, sure.
But that is divorced from reality.
At best, it's extremely cheeky.
At best, Lando Norris tells that team to go fuck themselves over the radio. Because there is no way he complies with that order.
I'd like to remind everybody here that Lando Norris literally gave up a win for that man at Hungary last year. Gave up a win, and McLaren had to beg him to do it, and he still did. He didn't have to do that. It wasn't Lando's fault as to how he ended up in front of Oscar after all shakout in Hungary. At the end of the day, like, again, McLaren dodged a bullet on this one, but I need people to understand. I know Oscar Piastri gets a lot of love for being the quiet introvert of Formula One in a title picture. He's just as snarky as every other elite driver you can think of. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Just don't pretend piss on my head. Don't piss on my head and call it rain. That's all I ask.
Yeah. Like, he was very, very lucky that he didn't have the worst day in terms of, like, punctual driving. Oliver Bearman, what was that?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Just to take down.
It almost got him in the points. What other stuff that we have here? Max Verstappen.
Can I point out as well, just to cut your audio real quick. Can I point out here as well? Do you know how hard you have to work to put off a piece of driving so stupid it was more intentional and deliberate than Max Verstappen in Spain? Because those who missed it, in practice, Ollie Bearman, under a red flag, sped up to 165 miles an hour so he could try a racing pit entry, lost control of his car, and put it in the wall. And he was
That's like a triple cardinal sin in racing.
That might be the stupidest thing I've ever seen a driver do in a practice session. And rightly so, he was given a 10-place grid penalty and 4 penalty points in his license. The first ever Formula One 4-point penalty. Because now we've got the guidelines on this, we actually now can refer to them. So with that, Bearman
is
now
saying we know what a penalty is, Dre?
Apparently. Because Ollie Bearman is now all of a sudden magically on 8 penalty points. He's in trouble because he doesn't lose points until November. Like, he's got to go 4 months and he's only really allowed maybe one more incident because he's lucky he didn't get 2 for wiping his teammate out.
If that was any other car but the other Haas, he almost certainly would have. Max Verstappen, as for mentioned, with all of the Red Bull nonsense going on, they cut all the downforce off to get the car balanced because otherwise it was just an understeering like a truck around this track. And it worked. And you got a sensational pole position. What do you need in the rain?
All that downforce, which he didn't add when he spun around coming out of a safety car. And after all that, he somehow managed to come back to finish 5th because
he's not for Verstappen.
Because he's not a beneficiary of having a dominant car. He's one of the best drivers of any era.
Well, and when the track dried out, you saw the vision because he was one of the quickest cars on track. For me, it was more him power sliding through Maggots and Becketts every lap, trying to hold off Piastri. And there was one of those where he was full Kansai Drifto Eurobeat.
Keiichi Tsuchiya would have been proud of that. Fellow Honda legend.
As mentioned earlier, Lewis Hamilton's podium streak at Silverstone ends. He still had a much, much better day than his Ferrari compatriot.
Yeah.
Charles, what was that?
this is the Charles Leclerc. This is the subplot picture, and it's just SpongeBob lurking down the cursed hallway. He had a bad. He was put on slicks when the track was nowhere near slicks, and it kind of just got worse from there.
Yeah. Generally speaking, Silverstone is the kind of track where even if you think it's dry, it probably isn't because of how cold it is and the fact that its surface water tends to stick around for a little bit longer than other circuits. It's a slow dryer. So it always has been Silverstone. And him and George Russell both gambled early on slicks and they paid the penalty. All
wasn't
over
great
the
early. And then we got a pair of VSCs to neutralize when the track was drying and they could have used it. Then they got to use those dry tires for a couple laps before the monsoon arrived.
Yeah.
And that kind of defined there. For a long time in this race, we had a Mercedes podium lockout with Lance Stroll in 3rd in his Aston, none of them being the factory Mercedes.
Yeah. And Aston had a good day. Got both their cars in the points for the first time this season, 7th and 9th. Stroll was excellent. And Alonso did well to come back and finish in 9th despite being put on 6th too early.
Yeah.
They had a great day. The problem is Sauber had the best day.
Yeah. See our previous point about Pierre Gasly. It was a quiet sixth place, really good sixth place. But what does that get you? Still a better last. There's one more note that we have here is that Carlos Sainz no longer running for FIA presidency, but somebody else is.
It's like that gif of the black woman coming through the door in I think it's in RuPaul's Drag Race saying, "Hi, I am back," because it's Tim Mayer, the steward that Mohammed Ben Sulayem fired at the end of last year. He's now
making, I didn't know that's who it was.
Yeah. He's now making a run for FIA presidency. He made a big announcement on the Friday of the race weekend that he has declared he's going to run for FIA president. And he's going to run against Mohammed Ben Sulayem. And I say good luck to him. He's going to need it.
VI yeah. lived bitch candidacy.
Very late, organized, you know, perfect for MBS to just win it. Practically uncontested unless there is a massive, massive swing at how things go. He's coming out with some fiery words. Mm. I mean, he basically accused him of, quote, a reign of terror after announcing his candidacy.
He called Mohammed Ben Sulayem's practices corrosive at the FIA. He said that, and look, I'll let you in on the little secret. There's going to be an exclusive interview with him on the Autosport feed next week. Keep your eye out for that one. But he really does think he's got a shot at this because he's been with the FIA in some capacity for basically 30 years now, on and off, and you know, 15 years as a steward. He does not like his whole premise is essentially Mohammed Ben Sulayem has not kept the promises he made when he made his manifesto for the presidency in the first place. I can do it better than him. I've been around the FIA. I've seen it run well. I've seen it run badly. I can be the man to fix this, basically. And look, allegedly, he is being endorsed by David Richards, the CEO of ProDrive and the head of Motorsport UK. That is significant clout. I'll say that much.
He gave Hülkenberg the trophy.
Yeah, that was cool. I was like, well done, boy. And look, again, I've met David Richards, coolest shit guy as well. I'll tell you that for free. I've eaten lunch in that man's office. Yeah, I've eaten lunch in that man's office. Cool as hell. And that's why the biggest flex I've had since joining Autosport, by the way. But I will say this, it's a big clout endorsement to have David Richards on board because he runs Motorsport UK as a racing club. And that's one of the biggest ones on the board. I fear it's going to be a landslide because Mohammed Ben Sulayem got where he is by ponying up to the Middle Eastern clubs. That's where he's drawn a lot of his power. But I am going to be curious to see just what the percentage swing is and just how much. For me, it would be a statement of how many people are prepared to vote against MBS to get rid of it. That's going to be fascinating to see what the percentage is. Because if there's one thing I've been told about FIA presidential elections, nobody really knows how much support they've got until the ballots actually come in. Ask Graham Stoker about that one when he ran against MBS and how that turned out.
Ask us members of the United States of America.
Oy, 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 oy.
Always comes.
Yeah, it was us UK guys. We love a good exit poll. They never lie to us. Anyway, Formula One is back in 2 weeks.
That sounds like a great segue to the exit of this podcast.
I agree. Formula One is back in 2 weeks' time because we've actually got an extra week off before we head to the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. Always a good time. Enjoy the extra week off in the meantime. Our bikes will be back next week as well. The German Grand Prix at the Saxon... Oh, no.
God, help us all.
There's one other thing, too. If you are a patron at patreon.com/motorsport101, you have time to submit suggestions because remember back during the COVID days where we didn't have any live racing, so we decided to just do MST3K or Rift Track style watch-alongs of famous races like Brazil 2012, Phillip Island 2015. Our 600 episode is going to be us kicking the tires on that suggestion once again. So you can suggest to us anything, just not those two races.
Yes.
And send not 24 hour races because my co-hosts are cowards.
Fuck you. Anything but those two races. Send in your suggestions. You can send them in personally wherever you find us on the internet. At DreHarrison101 on Twitter, at DreHarrison.BlueSky.social if you want to follow me on there as well. RJ and Cam, same places, same names. You can find them on their respective platforms as well. Send in your suggestions. We'll have our 600 episode watch along next week. That'll be fun as well. As mentioned, MotoGP next week. Al Black. So we'll also be talking a little IndyCar as well off the back of Mid-Ohio, where Alex Palou was dominant and looking on track to his seventh win of the season until he very suddenly wasn't. We'll talk about that as well later on in the week. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Well, surely Piastri's win and the loss of that win was the dumbest of the weekend, right?